Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking yesterday in the second hour about how in the world the Christian religion managed to cobble together a codex, a New Testament, where the author of half of the books was in wholesale conflict with, total enmity with, those that actually spent time with Yosha, his disciples. And that, therefore, you've got the first four books, which are either eyewitness accounts or historical accounts based on hearsay. And the letters from Jacob, from Shimon Kefesh, Peter, and Yohanan, James, plus Revelation, that those books are the inverse, the opposite, totally in conflict with Paul's letter, where Paul goes out of his way to condemn, to belittle, to render as moot their voice, the voice of the disciples, and yes, Yahusha's voice. What do you think about that, Kirk?
Well, you know, as you were talking with you and Glenn, we're talking this morning. We were enjoying Terry and I were enjoying that conversation. I did make a little note pertaining to that because it just occurred to me. And it kind of I know that you might disagree slightly in regards to Dode as being probably the understands Yahweh as good as anyone, and I don't really disagree with that. But I did, you know, the disciples should be able to witness to us what Yahweh is truly like because they walked with him. They questioned him. Mm-hmm. They lived with him. They observed him for 3.5 years. Shamar is what they did.
Right.
And he was the living word. So if anyone should know what Yahweh was like and what Yahweh said, it should have been the people who witnessed his manifestation, his on earth. No one save maybe Dode, who to me is the, or reading through the Torah, could teach us more about this than these guys, especially after Shavuot when they were also empowered and enlightened. So what could Paul or Shaul possibly add to the table?
Well,
and the answer, of course, is nothing.
Nothing, of course. But beyond that, this gets back to the conversation Glenn and I were having in the first hour. There is something far worse than not taking, you know, just ignoring cause and effect. In the case, you know, not holding Islam accountable for the terrorist acts that it perpetrates. So it's one thing to ignore, be oblivious to cause and effect. And your cause and effect here is that Yahweh, through Yosha, caused the individuals, given the title learners, disciples, to learn his Torah from the living manifestation of the Torah, and to deny that their importance, the value of their witness, as Paul did deliberately here in Galatians, is a crime. But a far worse crime is to undermine them, to not only condemn them, but to create a wholly false testimony that leads people astray. Then you're an ally with the Satan. And that's what Paul has done here. It's a far worse crime than simply trying to mitigate the value of the disciples' testimony.
Well, if you also consider that he was a Paul. Paul was rejected. He was deserted. He was nobody on his side. He was in the trash heap of history at the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the disciples, on the other hand, were very fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, and then Yahusha says to them, says to all of us, and I'm sure he's quoting somewhere from the Torah, I can't link it, but he said, you're known by your fruit. If he was really selected by God, he would have made an impact. And I'm not talking about what they made an impact of his letters later.
Right.
I'm talking about he would have made an impact in his lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is that the whole fruit, bad tree, nothing good comes from a bad tree.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing bad comes from a good tree.
Mm-hmm.
That whole discussion that Yosha is having is part of the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it's directly related to his transition into the wolf in sheep's clothing that is Paul, that leads people away from the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And his claim that those who would call him Lord, Lord, that not one of those calling him Lord will enter the kingdom of heaven. And that those who call him Lord, they will say that their fruit is having cast out demons, having built great edifices, and having preached these lofty sermons. And Yosef says, get away from me, those of you who are Torahless. I do not know you. And so that being known by your fruit and this uncompromising position that Yosha is taking here is really very thoughtful. It took me a while for me to understand why in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount there's like 10 sentences on the nature of fruit trees. And it finally dawned on me that there's a reason for that. You want to speculate as to what the reason that he has this long agricultural, horticultural discussion in the midst of the most important message of his entire ministry, the Sermon on the Mount, right before he condemns Paul personally?
Well, I mean, he's using it as a metaphor, but that's
of course, it's a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not talking about fruit.
No. So, I mean, he's talking about...
Let me help.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't mean I'm right here, because I'm going to disagree on something else here in a moment. And disagreements are good on these things because they're stimulating, and they also say that we're not seeking here, as part of the covenant, to agree on everything, to have exactly the same perceptions and perspectives and interpretations, because if we did, then life in eternity would be boring. There wouldn't be any advantage of having thousands of us there versus one of us there. So the idea of having some disagreements in perspective is what we want. that leads to stimulating conversation. All right. So on the first of them, this is what I think he's trying to convey in terms of his discussion on the fruit. I'm not going to grade on the curve. I'm not into compromise. I'm not the least bit tolerant. This idea of coexist is not in my vocabulary. Those who would ask, you know, how wrong can I be and still be right? Okay, so I'm wrong about his name, but he knows who I'm talking to. Okay, so I don't know the terms and conditions of the covenant, but I really want to be in heaven. I'm a pretty good person. I do the right things, and so surely God's not going to condemn me. I don't celebrate Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim, but I don't interpret Christmas and Easter as pagan holidays. You know, yeah, I go to a church and I don't understand the mikra, but I go there seeking God. And the question is, how wrong can you be and still be right?
That's not even in the ballpark.
And so the answer, I have two answers. One is that the purpose of this good and bad fruit, to say nothing good comes from a bad tree.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing good. So if you're looking at Paul's letters, now Paul's the worst of the rotten trees.
Sure.
And you were to make the claim, well, there's some things that Paul wrote that, you know, are meaningful. You know, his diatribe on love is, it's said at so many weddings. And so, you know, there's some things that Paul said that are good. No. You know, it wants just to know that if it's a rotten tree, everything that comes from that tree is rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants us to know that if it's a good tree, you know, if it's rooted in the Torah, everything that comes for it is good. And that these areas of gray where you can take the good and, you know, and leave the bad, God not be doing that. This idea that God's going to somehow look beyond the fact that people didn't know his name, that they didn't know the terms and conditions of the covenant, that they were fooled by the Christian New Testament, that, you know, that they thought there was a Trinity, but they were genuine, and that somehow that's going to work out for them. The purpose of the of that discussion is to say, no, I'm not grading on a curve. Now, that's part of what I always tell people. I say, you know, all well, I'm not my pay grade in terms of the family does not qualify me to judge individual souls. I don't want that job. I didn't ask for that job. I'm not qualified to do that job. So all I can do is talk in broad perspective. And I would say that if you don't celebrate the Mikra, if you do not know and have not accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant, if you do not know Yahweh's name, if you are religious, then there is no chance whatsoever that so long as you continue in that vein,
that you
will see the kingdom of heaven.
Yahweh said that.
Yeah. So that's my, that's because he's just non-compromising. He's not going to change. And so, and he's saying here that good fruit comes from the good tree and bad fruit comes from the bad tree, and you can't take parts and bits and pieces and make it all work. You know, I for years had a wonderful relationship with a really nice man, and Ken co-authored several books with him. But he sees the good in Christianity and still goes to a Christian church.
I remember y'all's conversation on the radio when y'all were talking about Paul when you first started.
Right. Yeah. He still incorporates Paul's sayings in his books. No. Nothing good comes from a bad tree. All right. There is the second part of my response to people that want to have God grade on the curve. Is that he has articulated a seven-step path to him, and he has articulated five terms and conditions for participation in the covenant. And he has provided us with an owner's manual, his Torah teaching and guidance, so that we can avail ourselves of these opportunities. Since he has done that and been clear about it, why would you want to know how wrong you can be and still enter the kingdom of heaven? Why not simply accept? Why not simply act upon? Why not come to understand what the Creator has offered? Kirk, you knew that I was going to disagree on this point, and I'd like to press it because I think it is worth considering. And I'm not claiming to be right. I'm just going to share my perspective. I think of the individuals who are in a position to know, and I'm going to start at the beginning with Adam, and then I'm going to go to Noah, and then Abraham. And from Abraham, I'm going to jump all the way to Moshe and Moses.
Oh, okay.
And then from Moses, I'm going to jump to Dode. And then I'm going to speak momentarily of the, also include the greatest of the prophets, Yashaya, Isaiah. And then we have the disciples.
Okay.
And it was your claim because of the fact that, Yosha handpicked them and because Yosha spent 3 years of his life teaching them, and being a living example of the Torah, that they were in a position to know Yahweh better.
Well, Yahweh well as most of us.
Personality and nature. Yeah, better than the other fellas.
That's pretty cool when you can walk over and ask him.
Yeah. Now,
and have that kind of dialogue. I know Moshe could, but, I mean, 3.5 years, a lot of things come up in 3.5 years.
Yeah, and so did Abraham. He had the same kind of relationship with Yahweh, although he wasn't there the whole time. Was over the same period of time.
Sure.
Okay. It's my personal conclusion that the disciples didn't know Yahweh even fractionally as well as Dode. Not even fractionally.
Well, they were slow.
They were slow. Yeah, they were slow. Yahweh did not pick great intellects.
No.
In these men. They were pragmatic men. And But they weren't particularly literate.
Matthew was about the only one. It was a good
right. Man. And when you read it, they're still, you know, when they wrote their eyewitness accounts, there are huge chasms of failures to make connections.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't make the connections. Yosha laid it out for them, and yet you can tell by reading Matanya's account and Yao Kanan's account, they didn't make the connections. They may have later in life, but it's after they wrote their eyewitness accounts. They didn't come to understand. When it comes to knowing someone, you make the transition from being well acquainted to absolutely, without doubt, understanding the essence of the individual when you make those connections. And it's my contention that there's two people that can stand on a precipice that came to know Yahweh better than anyone in human history. Moshe was one of them. And the reason I speak of Moshe is not because of the time that he and Yahweh spent together at the burning top of the mountain, not once but twice, on the 40 days of Yahweh dictating the Torah to him, and of the march into and out of Egypt, and then through the desert over those 40 years. That's a long time to spend together.
Mm-hmm.
My claims on behalf of Moshe being either the most enlightened or the second most enlightened, knowledgeable person on the nature of Yahweh and all of human history is based upon Dabarim.
Yeah.
Dabarim is an interesting part of the Torah. It's the part that Yosha quoted the most.
Mm-hmm.
And Dabarim is not in Yahweh's voice. Bereshith, Genesis, Shemot, Exodus, Kara, Leviticus, they're in Yahweh's voice. Dabarim is not, it's in Moshe's voice. And so what Dabarim is Yahweh's, I think, his favorite way to go. I'm not claiming to be right. I'm sharing. It's kind of the purpose of having these discussions. I'm sharing what my interpretation is. My interpretation is Yahweh's favorite way to work, to engage, is to make his guidance available to those of us who are willing to walk away from human institutions, human lies, and genuinely listen to him and provide rock solid, credible, enlightening, uplifting, consistent, brilliant testimony. And if you're open to it and you're willing to closely examine and carefully consider it, really listening to what Yahweh has to say, Shema and Shamar, then he wants you to communicate to others on his behalf. All right, so Kirk, I have shared with you why I think Moshe was understood, knew Yahweh better than the disciples. When I read Dabarim, which is Moshe sharing with the children of Israel and therefore through them with us, what was important for us to understand about Yahweh's Torah testimony, his Torah guidance, I see absolute brilliance. And he made the connections, and I don't see that same level of brilliance by even a factor of a billion to one between Dabarim and any one of the disciples' letters or accounts.
Sure. Well, my probably when I deal with you, I probably should be a little bit clearer.
Okay.
My real point was that in comparing where we were in yesterday's discussion,
mm-hmm.
comparing the disciples versus the Christian view of the disciples, or not their view, mm-hmm. but what the yeah. disciples are available to them
mm-hmm.
that they cling to so much that they don't seem to read,
right.
versus Paul's edition, because
right.
If you really looked at the disciples' writings
mm-hmm.
and based it, I know it's a secondary historical documented
right.
bit,
uh-huh.
and however,
mm-hmm.
they do present Yahusha, whether they know it or not, they do present Yahusha as a Torah observant, Mikra participating in, and
mm-hmm. yeah.
Shabbat
mm-hmm.
participating. He
yep.
hated religion.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the Roman Empire. He talks against it. He tells
mm-hmm.
you these are the horrible.
Mm-hmm.
He presents himself that he loved his family. He's
mm-hmm.
married. He always talks that he's speaking for Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's conveyed in there. That's half of our argument when we talk with a Christian, is what he said, and you don't listen to what he said.
Mm-hmm.
He always says, go to the Torah
mm-hmm.
and get your answers there.
Yep.
I mean, they conveyed that to us. So they
yeah.
he told us about the future when he's with Revelations, as
sure.
far as the prophecies that he made. So from that standpoint, in a comparison of them versus Paul,
yeah.
because we were talking about an argument between Shimon, Kephish, and Paul, I don't disagree with you about
a billion gazillion to one.
Yeah, he got
a billion. Yeah,
yeah,
in fact, not even a billion gazillion to one. There isn't a number
no.
that I could articulate that would be sufficient to convey
mm-hmm.
the difference between the knowledge and understanding of the disciples compared to the knowledge and understanding of Paul vis-a-vis Yahusha, Yahweh, and his Torah.
Yeah.
They would be, well, Paul besmirches them and claims to know more than they do.
Uh-huh.
And he condemns them as their testimony meant nothing to him because Paul was so much more important, according to Paul.
According to Paul.
Right. Well, Paul presents himself as a million to one superior to the disciples. I would put Paul at an astronomical number, a number of billions times billions times trillions inferior to the disciples in terms of actually knowing Yahweh. And while the disciples seldom make a connection, seldom show that they really processed the information and understood it. They do, at least in their original accounts, which have been horribly maligned by the Christian religion, Christian church. But to the degree that we can roll back the clock and look at the oldest manuscripts and then convert Greek back into Hebrew, Mattaniah and Yahuchanan, and to the degree that Mark represents Shimon Kephish's testimony.
Mm-hmm.
They provide something that is equally important to Yahweh's testimony. And I'm going to say equally important, and I'm a little uncomfortable saying equally important. But the thing that is equally important to Yahweh's testimony is the human analysis of it. A covenant member who loves Yahweh's testimony, who examines it carefully, who listens to what Yah has to say, who views everything from the perspective of Yahweh's Torah and as it sheds light on participation in his covenant. Dabarim, which is that knowledge filtered through Moshe, or the Psalms, which is that knowledge filtered through Dode, I think is equally valuable to us. But
mm-hmm.
what the disciples did is a marvelous job of conveying what Yahusha said and did. And that means that their testimony is marvelously valuable. And, of course, Paul has discounted it, and Paul has no knowledge whatsoever of Yahusha. Never once quotes him. Never once talks about the things that he did and why he did them.
He hates the Torah.
Right.
He's
so
made it very clear.
So that point is we're in complete agreement. But what I don't want, and it's and maybe I'm the only person on the planet that thinks this way, and if that's okay, that's okay with me. I'm not trying to recruit believers here. I don't want to make excuses for us. You know, this thought, well, you know, the disciples knew him better than we do. I'm not sure they did. And the reason is because you look at, I understand that you and I, will never in our lifetime on this earth come to know Yahweh as well as Moshe did, based upon Moshe's thoughtful presentation in Devarim. That's way beyond where anything that I'm capable of going. I can benefit from what he shared in Devarim, and I learn from it, and I accept it, and I embrace it, and I grow through it, but I could not have written it. But the same thing is true with Dode, who lived, 400 years after Moshe. All Dode had to go by was he could read what Moshe had scribed in the Torah. And yet his Psalms on the Torah make the conclusions that say he really knew. He totally understood. He made those connections so as to demonstrate this affinity for Yahweh and his word that second probably only to Moshe. And while I think Moshe was more pragmatic in his presentation of Yahweh's testimony, I think it is more pragmatic. Dode is just brilliant. Soaring in intellect and style and artistry. And so, you know, it kind of depends on your frame of mind. The artistry and the brilliance of Dode appeal to you and I.
Yeah.
But it's the reason I'm making the point, and it's not so that we could have a minor disagreement just to keep things interesting. The reason I'm making the point is that I don't want, and I know you don't advocate this, because you and I don't make excuses in this regard. But I don't want anybody else to think that, well, you know, the children of Israel that were taken out of Egypt and into the promised land, they had this huge advantage that we don't have, and that Yahweh was there with them every day. They actually heard his voice. They actually saw the tablets that he etched in stone. They heard the reading of the original autograph of the Torah in their native tongue, day after day. Or that somehow Abraham, because he ate and drank with Yahweh, walked with Yahweh, saw Yahweh literally take him out of Babylon and into the promised land, that Abraham had an advantage that we didn't have. I don't think they did. I think we have an advantage that they did not have.
Well, we're at the end of the parade, you know.
Yeah.
And we get to look at the whole parade.
Oh, man. And that perspective is extraordinarily valuable. We can look at this enormous number of precisely accurate predictions. And we can even look at the creation account and the flood account through the eyes of science. And the knowledge that we have from science and say, brilliantly, accurately presented. And we can look at what we've come to know about the history of these countries and of these peoples and now see this book is precisely accurate scientifically, historically, and prophetically, because we're at the end of the parade. And we can see how Yahusha became the living embodiment of the Torah to enable the promises that Yahweh had made regarding Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, and Shavuah. And we can see that the fulfillment of Teruah and Kippurim and Sukkah is on our horizon.
Yeah, I can physically see what's going to happen.
Right.
I wish I could not have, if I didn't have the Torah.
And you can now, in the quiet moments with your wife, you can examine every stroke of every letter that Yahweh conveyed to us and come to understand the depth of the meaning and the relationship that is conveyed in those words. And we can analyze the relational stems, the volitional moods, the timeless nature of Hebrew, and ponder it. I think it gives us greater access to knowing Yahweh than so many others have had, even the disciples. And so it's just my thought is that yes, if you're comparing the disciples to Paul, it's a billion, trillion, billion, trillion, billion, trillion to one in favor of the disciples.
Or to zero.
Oh, yeah, to zero in favor of the disciples over Paul.
And I'm not big on reading the New Testament. In fact, I have to go back and reread it in these discussions because it's been, I put them down 7 years ago and didn't care.
Yeah, I know. Most of it's trash.
If everything is in the Torah and everything I need to know is in the Torah, why am I wasting time with somebody with this other than a historical reference here?
Yeah, and when we come back from the break, I'm going to share something about Yahusha that may or may not be fair. I'm going to share it, and I might get a lot of flack on this because I may be wrong on this. But I'm going to compare Yahusha to Moshe, and let's see how that works out.
Okay.
I think that Yahusha was effectively, as it relates to his Devarim words, doing the same thing that Moshe did in Devarim.
Well, they were the same words.
You know, in Devarim, Moshe quotes Yahweh from the Torah, and then he interprets those words, applies those words, makes the connections that help us understand those words. Yahusha quoted the Torah, and then he explained those words for us. He interpreted those words from a human perspective, man to man, conveying the intent of those words and the meaning and the purpose of those words in our lives. And I've already said that, listen, I'm not qualified to carry Moshe's sandal strap. But you know, Yada Yah and Intro to God, the attempt was to write them the same way. I wasn't thinking of this at the time, but the attempt was to mirror the Torah, particularly Devarim. I quote Yahweh, and then I seek to draw connections that cause us to think about and apply and understand what God said. That's how Devarim is written. That's what Yahusha did. He cited the Torah and then explained it to people.
Right.
So I think Yahusha, you know, when the Moshe prophecy that one will come like you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe the like you is like Yahusha and Devarim, so that the word of Yahusha and the words of Moshe and Devarim, that exact same approach. It's the approach I think God likes the most. When his children get it, when his children come to know and understand what he said by Shamar and Shama, and then Bien, understand, go from Yada to Bien, and then convey that using, you know, processing it and sharing it and celebrating it, I think that is what Yahweh likes the most. I think that's what he's encouraging.
Well, your task was a little bit tougher because you're talking to an English audience, so you've had to also add the Hebrew words to the English and give the definitions and make it available where we can look it up and check it and see what else we can find there or to check the accuracy of it.
But my job has also been enormously. My job has also been enormously easier, though, Kirk, because with Moshe and with Dode, they were writing that which we value, which Yahusha told us to value, as the inspired word of Yahweh, and so the standards they had to uphold was absolute perfection. Because all I'm doing is commenting on what they, sharing what they wrote, and then commenting on what they wrote. I'm not held to that standard. And, you know, I can make mistakes and then go back and correct those mistakes. So it's a much easier standard. But it's no less fun.
They couldn't miss it. They can't miss a jot of tittle, can they?
No, they can't miss a jot of tittle. And you know that I've missed a few jots and tittles over my time.
Thousands of pages here.
Of edits. Yeah, a scrap heap of edits. And I make no excuse for the fact that I make mistakes, because I personally think when you're able to admit that you were wrong, and that something Yahweh has said on further reflection causes you to understand the testimony differently, and you grow through it and let go of what was erroneous and embrace that which is true. Well, I think that shows the very attitude and approach that Yahweh wants to see in his children, not just now, but forever.
Well, that's what Shamar is. We just keep examining and see what we can learn.
Right.
It's an ongoing thing. You don't just examine it once and then quit.
Right.
So
I think you view yourself, though, in a position that is in many ways superior to what most that engaged with Yahweh along life's way were in. I mean, you're an artist, and you can view up close and personal the pictures that the ultimate artist drew for us to understand him.
Well, I have a different perspective, I'm sure, because I'm more visual than people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not that special, it's just different.
But it is enlightening, it's enriching, it's equipping. It's exactly what Yahweh intended. And it puts you in a wonderful position to know him and to share what he's conveying and offering to us. We'll be back tomorrow. May God bless.